Chapter 12 Clown. I am gone, sir, and anon, sir, I'll be with you again. Twelfth Night. The Hurons stood aghast at this sudden visitation of death on one of their band. But as they regarded the fatal accuracy of an aim which had dared to immolate an enemy at so much hazard to a friend, the name of La Longue Carabine burst simultaneously from every lip, and was succeeded by a wild and a sort of plaintive howl. The cry was answered by a loud shout from a little thicket, where the incautious party had piled their arms, and at the next moment Hawkeye, too eager to load the rifle he had regained, was seen advancing upon them, brandishing the clubbed weapon, and cutting the air with wide and powerful sweeps. Bold and rapid as was the progress of the scout, it was exceeded by that of a light and vigorous form which, bounding past him, leaped with incredible activity and daring into the very center of the Hurons, where it stood, whirling a tomahawk and flourishing a glittering knife with fearful menaces in front of Cora. Quicker than the thoughts could follow these unexpected and audacious movements, an image, armed in the emblematic panoply of death, glided before their eyes and assumed a threatening attitude at the other's side. The savage tormentors recoiled before these warlike intruders and uttered, as they appeared in such quick succession, the often repeated and peculiar exclamation of surprise, followed by the well-known and dreaded appellation of Le Cerf Agile, Le Gros Serpent. But the wary and vigilant leader of the Hurons was not so easily disconcerted. Casting his keen eyes around the little plain, he comprehended the nature of the assault at a glance, and encouraging his followers by his voice as well as by his example, he unsheathed his long and dangerous knife and rushed with a loud whoop upon the expecting Chingachgook. It was the signal for a general combat. Neither party had firearms, and the contest was to be decided in the deadliest manner, hand to hand, with weapons of offense and none of defense. Uncas answered the whoop, and leaping on an enemy with a single well-directed blow of his tomahawk, cleft him to the brain. Hayward tore the weapon of Magua from the sapling and rushed eagerly towards the fray. As the combatants were now equal in number, each singled an opponent from the adverse band. The rush and blows passed with the fury of a whirlwind and the swiftness of lightning. Hawkeye soon got another enemy within reach of his arm, and with one sweep of his formidable weapon he beat down the slight and inartificial defenses of his antagonist, crushing him to the earth with the blow. Hayward ventured to hurl the tomahawk he had seized, too ardent to await the moment of closing. It struck the Indian he had selected on the forehead, and checked for an instant his onward rush. Encouraged by this slight advantage, the impetuous young man continued his onset, and sprang upon his enemy with naked hands. A single instant was enough to assure him of the rashness of the measure, for he immediately found himself fully engaged, with all his activity and courage, in endeavoring to ward the desperate thrusts made with the knife of the Huron. Unable longer to foil an enemy so alert and vigilant, he threw his arms about him and succeeded in pinning the limbs of the other to his side with an iron grasp, but one that was far too exhausting to himself to continue long. In this extremity, he heard a voice near him shouting, "Exterminate the varlets! No quarter to an accursed Mingo!" At the next moment, the breech of Hawkeye's rifle fell on the naked head of his adversary, whose muscles appeared to wither under the shock as he sank from the arms of Duncan, flexible and motionless. When Uncas had brained his first antagonist, he turned like a hungry lion to seek another. The fifth and only Huron disengaged at the first onset had paused a moment, and then seeing that all around him were employed in the deadly strife, he sought, with hellish vengeance, to complete the baffled work of revenge. Raising a shout of triumph, he sprang towards the defenseless Cora, sending his keen axe as the dreadful precursor of his approach. The tomahawk grazed her shoulder, and cutting the withes which bound her to the tree, left the maiden at liberty to fly. She eluded the grasp of the savage, and reckless of her own safety, threw herself on the bosom of Alice, striving with convulsed and ill-directed fingers to tear asunder the twigs which confined the person of her sister. Any other than a monster would have relented at such an act of generous devotion to the best and purest affection, but the breast of the Huron was a stranger to sympathy. Seizing Cora by the rich tresses which fell in confusion about her form, he tore her from her frantic hold and bowed her down with brutal violence to her knees. The savage drew the flowing curls through his hand, and raising them on high with an outstretched arm, he passed the knife around the exquisitely molded head of his victim with a taunting and exulting laugh. But he purchased this moment of fierce gratification with the loss of the fatal opportunity. It was just then the sight caught the eye of Uncas. Bounding from his footsteps, he appeared for an instant darting through the air, and descending in a ball, he fell on the chest of his enemy, driving him many yards from the spot, headlong and prostrate. The violence of the exertion cast the young Mohican at his side. They arose together, fought and bled each in his turn. But the conflict was soon decided. The tomahawk of Hayward and the rifle of Hawkeye descended on the skull of the Huron at the same moment that the knife of Uncas reached his heart. The battle was now entirely terminated, with the exception of the protracted struggle between Le Renard Subtil and Le Gros Serpent. Well did these barbarous warriors prove that they deserved those significant names which had been bestowed for deeds in former wars. When they engaged, some little time was lost in eluding the quick and vigorous thrusts which had been aimed at their lives. Suddenly darting on each other, they closed and came to the earth, twisted together like twining serpents in pliant and subtle folds. At the moment when the victors found themselves unoccupied, the spot where these experienced and desperate combatants lay could only be distinguished by a cloud of dust and leaves which moved from the center of the little plain towards its boundary, as if raised by the passage of a whirlwind. Urged by the different motives of filial affection, friendship, and gratitude, Hayward and his companions rushed with one accord to the place, encircling the little canopy of dust which hung above the warriors. In vain did Uncas dart around the cloud with a wish to strike his knife into the heart of his father's foe. The threatening rifle of Hawkeye was raised and suspended in vain, while Duncan endeavored to seize the limbs of the Huron with hands that appeared to have lost their power. Covered as they were with dust and blood, the swift evolutions of the combatants seemed to incorporate their bodies into one. The death-like-looking figure of the Mohican and the dark form of the Huron gleamed before their eyes in such quick and confused succession that the friends of the former knew not where nor when to plant the succoring blow. It is true there were short and fleeting moments when the fiery eyes of Magua were seen glittering like the fabled organs of the basilisk through the dusty wreath by which he was enveloped, and he read by those short and deadly glances the fate of the combat in the presence of his enemies. Ere, however, any hostile hand could descend on his devoted head, its place was filled by the scowling visage of Chingachgook. In this manner the scene of the combat was removed from the center of the little plain to its verge. The Mohican now found an opportunity to make a powerful thrust with his knife. Magua suddenly relinquished his grasp and fell backward without motion, and seemingly without life. His adversary leaped on his feet, making the arches of the forest ring with the sounds of triumph. "Well done for the Delawares! Victory to the Mohican!" cried Hawkeye, once more elevating the butt of the long and fatal rifle. "A finishing blow from a man without a cross will never tell against his honor, nor rob him of his right to the scalp." But at the very moment when the dangerous weapon was in the act of descending, the subtle Huron rolled swiftly from beneath the danger over the edge of the precipice, and falling on his feet, was seen leaping with a single bound into the center of a thicket of low bushes which clung along its sides. The Delawares, who had believed their enemy dead, uttered their exclamation of surprise and were following with speed and clamor, like hounds in open view of the deer, when a shrill and peculiar cry from the scout instantly changed their purpose and recalled them to the summit of the hill. "'Twas like himself!" cried the inveterate forester, whose prejudices contributed so largely to veil his natural sense of justice in all matters which concerned the Mingos. "A lying and deceitful varlet as he is, an honest Delaware now, being fairly vanquished, would have lain still and been knocked on the head. But these knavish Maquas cling to life like so many cats of the mountain. Let him go, let him go. 'Tis but one man, and he without rifle or bow, many a long mile from his French comrades, and like a rattler that has lost his fangs, he can do no further mischief until such time as he and we too may leave the prints of our moccasins over a long reach of sandy plain. See, Uncas, he added, in Delaware, your father is flaying the scalps already. It may be well to go round and feel the vagabonds that are left, or we may have another of them loping through the woods and screeching like a jay that has been winged. So saying, the honest but implacable scout made the circuit of the dead, into whose senseless bosoms he thrust his long knife, with as much coolness as though they had been so many brute carcasses. He had, however, been anticipated by the elder Mohican, who had already torn the emblems of victory from the unresisting heads of the slain. But Uncas, denying his habits, we had almost said his nature, flew with instinctive delicacy, accompanied by Hayward, to the assistance of the females, and quickly releasing Alice, placed her in the arms of Cora. We shall not attempt to describe the gratitude to the Almighty Disposer of events which glowed in the bosoms of the sisters, who were thus unexpectedly restored to life and to each other. Their thanksgivings were deep and silent, the offerings of their gentle spirits, burning brightest and purest on the secret altars of their hearts, and their renovated and more earthly feelings exhibiting themselves in long and fervent, though speechless, caresses. As Alice rose from her knees where she had sunk by the side of Cora, she threw herself on the bosom of the latter, and sobbed aloud the name of their aged father, while her soft, dove-like eyes sparkled with the rays of hope.
"We are saved! We are saved!" she murmured. "To return to the arms of our dear, dear father, and his heart will not be broken with grief. And you too, Cora, my sister, my more than sister, my mother, you too are spared. And Duncan," she added, looking round upon the youth with a smile of ineffable innocence, "even our own brave and noble Duncan has escaped without a hurt."
To these ardent and nearly incoherent words Cora made no other answer than by straining the youthful speaker to her heart as she bent over her in melting tenderness. The manhood of Hayward felt no shame in dropping tears over this spectacle of affectionate rapture, and Uncas stood, fresh and blood-stained from the combat, a calm and apparently an unmoved looker-on, it is true, but with eyes that had already lost their fierceness and were beaming with a sympathy that elevated him far above the intelligence and advanced him probably centuries before the practices of his nation. During this display of emotions so natural in their situation, Hawkeye, whose vigilant distrust had satisfied itself that the Hurons, who disfigured the heavenly scene, no longer possessed the power to interrupt its harmony, approached David and liberated him from the bonds he had until that moment endured with the most exemplary patience. "There," exclaimed the scout, casting the last withe behind him, "you are once more master of your own limbs, though you seem not to use them with greater judgment than that in which they were first fashioned. If advice from one who is not older than yourself, but who, having lived most of his time in the wilderness, may be said to have experience beyond his years, will give no offense, you are welcome to my thoughts. And these are: to part with the little tooting instrument in your jacket to the first fool you meet with, and buy some useful weapon with the money, if it be only the barrel of a horseman's pistol. By industry and care, you might thus come to some preferment. For by this time I should think your eyes would plainly tell you that a carrion crow is a better bird than a mocking thresher. The one will at least remove foul sights from before the face of man, while the other is only good to brew disturbances in the woods by cheating the ears of all that hear them."
"Arms and the clarion for the battle, but the song of thanksgiving to the victory," answered the liberated David. "Friend," he added, thrusting forth his lean, delicate hand towards Hawkeye in kindness, while his eyes twinkled and grew moist, "I thank thee that the hairs of my head still grow where they were first rooted by Providence. For though those of other men may be more glossy and curling, I have ever found mine own well suited to the brain they shelter. That I did not join myself to the battle was less owing to disinclination than to the bonds of the heathen. Valiant and skillful hast thou proved thyself in the conflict, and I hereby thank thee, before proceeding to discharge other and more important duties, because thou hast proved thyself well worthy of a Christian's praise."
"The thing is but a trifle, and what you may often see if you tarry long among us," returned the scout, a good deal softened towards the man of song by this unequivocal expression of gratitude.
I have got back my old companion, Killdeer, he added, striking his hand on the breech of his rifle. And that in itself is a victory. These Iroquois are cunning, but they outwitted themselves when they placed their firearms out of reach, and had Uncas or his father been gifted with only their common Indian patience, we should have come in upon the knaves with 3 bullets instead of 1, and that would have made a finish of the whole pack, yon loping varlet as well as his comrades. But 'twas all foreordered and for the best.
Thou sayest well, returned David, and hast caught the true spirit of Christianity. He that is to be saved will be saved, and he that is predestined to be damned will be damned. This is the doctrine of truth, and most consoling and refreshing it is to the true believer.
The scout, who by this time was seated, examining into the state of his rifle with a species of parental assiduity, now looked up at the other in a displeasure that he did not affect to conceal, roughly interrupting further speech.
Doctrine or no doctrine, said the sturdy woodsman, 'tis the belief of knaves and the curse of an honest man. I can credit that yonder Huron was to fall by my hand, for with my own eyes I have seen it. But nothing short of being a witness will cause me to think he had met with any reward, or that Chingachgook there will be condemned at the final day.
You have no warranty for such an audacious doctrine, nor any covenant to support it, cried David, who was deeply tinctured with the subtle distinctions which, in his time, and more especially in his province, had been drawn around the beautiful simplicity of revelation, by endeavoring to penetrate the awful mystery of the divine nature, supplying faith by self-sufficiency, and by consequence involving those who reasoned from such human dogmas in absurdities and doubt. Your temple is reared on the sands, and the first tempest will wash away its foundation. I demand your authorities for such an uncharitable assertion.
Like other advocates of a system, David was not always accurate in his use of terms.
Name chapter and verse. In which of the holy books do you find language to support you?
Book, repeated Hawkeye, with singular and ill-concealed disdain. Do you take me for a whimpering boy at the apron string of one of your old gals? And this good rifle on my knee for the feather of a goose's wing, my ox's horn for a bottle of ink, and my leathern pouch for a cross-barred handkerchief to carry my dinner? Book! What have such as I, who am a warrior of the wilderness, though a man without a cross, to do with books? I never read but in one, and the words that are written there are too simple and too plain to need much schooling, though I may boast that of 40 long and hard-working years.
What call you the volume? Said David, misconceiving the other's meaning.
'Tis open before your eyes, returned the scout, and he who owns it is not a niggard of its use. I have heard it said that there are men who read in books to convince themselves there is a God. I know not but a man may so deform his works in the settlement as to leave that which is so clear in the wilderness a matter of doubt among traders and priests. If any such there be, and he will follow me from sun to sun through the windings of the forest, he shall see enough to teach him that he is a fool, and that the greatest of his folly lies in striving to rise to the level of one he can never equal, be it in goodness or be it in power.
The instant David discovered that he battled with a disputant who imbibed his faith from the lights of nature, eschewing all subtleties of doctrine, he willingly abandoned a controversy from which he believed neither profit nor credit was to be derived. While the scout was speaking, he had also seated himself, and producing the ready little volume and the iron-rimmed spectacles, he prepared to discharge a duty which nothing but the unexpected assault he had received in his orthodoxy could have so long suspended. He was, in truth, a minstrel of the Western continent, of a much later day, certainly, than those gifted bards who formerly sang the profane renown of baron and prince, but after the spirit of his own age and country. And he was now prepared to exercise the cunning of his craft in celebration of, or rather in thanksgiving for, the recent victory. He waited patiently for Hawkeye to cease. Then, lifting his eyes, together with his voice, he said aloud,
I invite you, friends, to join in praise for this signal deliverance from the hands of barbarians and infidels to the comfortable and solemn tones of the tune called Northampton.
He next named the page and verse where the rhymes selected were to be found, and applied the pitch-pipe to his lips,
with a decent gravity that he had been wont to use in the temple. This time he was, however, without any accompaniment, for the sisters were just then pouring out those tender effusions of affection which have been already alluded to. Nothing deterred by the smallness of his audience, which in truth consisted only of the discontented scout, he raised his voice, commencing and ending the sacred song without accident or interruption of any kind. Hawkeye listened while he coolly adjusted his flint and reloaded his rifle. But the sounds, wanting the extraneous assistance of scene and sympathy, failed to awaken his slumbering emotions. Never minstrel, or by whatever more suitable name David should be known, drew upon his talents in the presence of more insensible auditors. Though considering the singleness and sincerity of his motive, it is probable that no bard of profane song ever uttered notes that ascended so near to that throne where all homage and praise is due. The scout shook his head, and muttering some unintelligible words among which throat and Iroquois were alone audible, he walked away to collect and to examine into the state of the captured arsenal of the Hurons. In this office he was now joined by Chingachgook, who found his own as well as the rifle of his son among the arms. Even Hayward and David were furnished with weapons, nor was ammunition wanting to render them all effectual. When the foresters had made their selection and distributed their prizes, the scout announced that the hour had arrived when it was necessary to move. By this time the song of Gamut had ceased, and the sisters had learned to still the exhibition of their emotions. Aided by Duncan and the younger Mohican, the two latter descended the precipitous sides of that hill which they had so lately ascended under so very different auspices, and whose summit had so nearly proved the scene of their massacre. At the foot they found the Narragansetts browsing the herbage of the bushes, and having mounted they followed the movements of a guide who, in the most deadly straits, had so often proved himself their friend. The journey was, however, short. Hawkeye, leaving the blind path that the Hurons had followed, turned short to his right, and entering the thicket, he crossed the babbling brook and halted in a narrow dell, under the shade of a few water elms. Their distance from the base of the fatal hill was but a few rods, and the steeds had been serviceable only in crossing the shallow stream. The scout and the Indians appeared to be familiar with the sequestered place where they now were, for, leaning their rifles against the trees, they commenced throwing aside the dried leaves and opening the blue clay, out of which a clear and sparkling spring of bright, glancing water quickly bubbled. The white man then looked about him as though seeking for some object which was not to be found as readily as he expected. "Them careless imps, the Mohawks, with their Tuscarora and Onondaga brethren, have been here slaking their thirst," he muttered, "and the vagabonds have thrown away the gourd. This is the way with benefits when they are bestowed on such disremembering hounds. Here has the Lord laid his hand in the midst of the howling wilderness for their good and raised a fountain of water from the bowels of the earth that might laugh at the richest shop of apothecaries' ware in all the colonies. And see, the knaves have trodden in the clay and deformed the cleanliness of the place as though they were brute beasts instead of human men." Uncas silently extended towards him the desired gourd, which the spleen of Hawkeye had hitherto prevented him from observing on a branch of an elm. Filling it with water, he retired a short distance to a place where the ground was more firm and dry. Here he coolly seated himself, and after taking a long and apparently a grateful draught, he commenced a very strict examination of the fragments of food left by the Hurons, which had hung in a wallet on his arm. "Thank you, lad," he continued, returning the empty gourd to Uncas. "Now we will see how these rampaging Hurons lived when outlying in ambushments. Look at this. The varlets know the better pieces of the deer, and one would think they might carve and roast a saddle equal to the best cook in the land. But everything is raw, for the Iroquois are thorough savages. Uncas, take my steel and kindle a fire. A mouthful of a tender broil will give nature a helping hand after so long a trail." Hayward, perceiving that their guides now set about their repast in sober earnest, assisted the ladies to alight, and placed himself at their side, not unwilling to enjoy a few moments of grateful rest after the bloody scene he had just gone through. While the culinary process was in hand, curiosity induced him to inquire into the circumstances which had led to their timely and unexpected rescue. "How is it that we see you so soon, my generous friend?" he asked. and without aid from the garrison of Edward. Had we gone to the bend in the river, we might have been in time to rake the leaves over your bodies, but too late to have saved your scalps, coolly answered the scout. No, no. Instead of throwing away strength and opportunity by crossing to the fort, we lay by under the bank of the Hudson, waiting to watch the movements of the Hurons.
You were, then, witnesses of all that passed?
Not of all, for Indian sight is too keen to be easily cheated, and we kept close. A difficult matter it was, too, to keep this Mohican boy snug in the ambushment. Ah, Uncas, your behavior was more like that of a curious woman than of a warrior on his scent.
Uncas permitted his eyes to turn for an instant on the sturdy countenance of the speaker, but he neither spoke nor gave any indication of repentance. On the contrary, Hayward thought the manner of the young Mohican was disdainful, if not a little fierce, and that he suppressed passions that were ready to explode, as much in compliment to the listeners as from the deference he usually paid to his white associate.
"You saw our capture?" Hayward next demanded.
"We heard it," was the significant answer. An Indian yell is plain language to men who have passed their days in the woods. "But when you landed, we were driven to crawl like serpents beneath the leaves. And then we lost sight of you entirely until we placed eyes on you again, trussed to the trees and ready bound for an Indian massacre.
Our rescue was the deed of providence. It was nearly a miracle that you did not mistake the path, for the Hurons divided and each band had its horses.
Aye. There we were thrown off the scent and might indeed have lost the trail had it not been for Uncas. We took the path, however, that led into the wilderness, for we judged, and judged rightly, that the savages would hold that course with their prisoners. But when we had followed it for many miles without finding a single twig broken as I had advised, my mind misgave me, especially as all the footsteps had the prints of moccasins.
Our captors had the precaution to see us shod like themselves, said Duncan, raising a foot and exhibiting the buckskin he wore.
Aye, 'twas judgmatical, and like themselves. Though we were too expert to be thrown from a trail by so common an invention.
To what, then, are we indebted for our safety?
To what, as a white man who has no taint of Indian blood, I should be ashamed to own? To the judgment of the young Mohican. In matters which I should know better than he, but which I can now hardly believe to be true, though my own eyes tell me it is so.
'Tis extraordinary. Will you not name the reason?
Uncas was bold enough to say that the beasts ridden by the gentle ones, continued Hawkeye, glancing his eyes not without curious interest on the fillies of the ladies, planted the legs of one side on the ground at the same time, which is contrary to the movements of all trotting four-footed animals of my knowledge except the bear. And yet here are horses that always journey in this manner, as my own eyes have seen, and as their trail has shown for 20 long miles.
'Tis the merit of the animal. They come from the shores of Narragansett Bay, in the small province of Providence Plantations, and are celebrated for their hardihood and the ease of this particular movement, though other horses are not unfrequently trained to do the same.
It may be," said Hawkeye, who had listened with singular attention to this explanation. "Though I am a man who has the full blood of the whites, my judgment in deer and beaver is greater than in beasts of burden. Major Effingham has many noble chargers, but I have never seen one travel after such a sidling gait."
"True, for he would value the animals for very different properties. Still is this a breed highly esteemed, and as you witness, much honored with the burdens it is often destined to bear."
The Mohicans had suspended their operations about the glimmering fire to listen, and when Duncan had done, they looked at each other significantly, the father uttering the never-failing exclamation of surprise. The scout ruminated, like a man digesting his newly acquired knowledge, and once more stole a curious glance at the horses.
"I dare to say there are even stranger sights to be seen in the settlements," he said at length. "Nature is sadly abused by man when he once gets the mastery. But go sidling or go straight, Uncas had seen the movement, and their trail led us on to the broken bush. The outer branch near the prints of one of the horses was bent upward as a lady breaks a flower from its stem, but all the rest were ragged and broken down, as if the strong hand of a man had been tearing them. So I concluded that the cunning varmints had seen the twig bent and had torn the rest to make us believe a buck had been feeling the boughs with his antlers. I do believe your sagacity did not deceive you, for some such thing occurred.
That was easy to see, added the scout, in no degree conscious of having exhibited any extraordinary sagacity. And a very different matter it was from a waddling horse. It then struck me the Mingoes would push for this spring, for the knaves well know the virtue of its waters.
Is it then so famous? Demanded Hayward, examining with a more curious eye the secluded dell with its bubbling fountain, surrounded as it was by earth of a deep, dingy brown.
Few redskins who travel south and east of the Great Lakes but have heard of its qualities. Will you taste for yourself?
Hayward took the gourd, and after swallowing a little of the water, threw it aside with grimaces of discontent. The scout laughed in his silent but heartfelt manner, and shook his head with vast satisfaction.
Ah! You want the flavor that one gets by habit. The time was when I liked it as little as yourself, but I have come to my taste, and I now crave it as a deer does the licks. Your high-spiced wines are not better liked than a redskin relishes this water, especially when his nature is ailing. But Uncas has made his fire, and it is time we think of eating, for our journey is long and all before us.
Interrupting the dialogue by this abrupt transition, the scout had instant recourse to the fragments of food which had escaped the voracity of the Hurons. A very summary process completed the simple cookery, when he and the Mohicans commenced their humble meal with the silence and characteristic diligence of men who ate in order to enable themselves to endure great and unremitting toil. When this necessary and happily grateful duty had been performed, each of the foresters stooped and took a long and parting draught at that solitary and silent spring, around which and its sister fountains, within 50 years, the wealth, beauty, and talents of a hemisphere were to assemble in throngs in pursuit of health and pleasure. Then Hawkeye announced his determination to proceed. The sisters resumed their saddles. Duncan and David grasped their rifles and followed on their footsteps, the scout leading the advance and the Mohicans bringing up the rear. The whole party moved swiftly through the narrow path towards the north, leaving the healing waters to mingle unheeded with the adjacent brook, and the bodies of the dead to fester on the neighboring mount without the rites of sepulture, a fate but too common to the warriors of the woods to excite either commiseration or comment.
Chapter 13. I'll Seek a Readier Path. Parnell.
The route taken by Hawkeye lay across those sandy plains, relieved by occasional valleys and swells of land, which had been traversed by their party on the morning of the same day, with the baffled Magua for their guide. The sun had now fallen low towards the distant mountains, and as their journey lay through the interminable forest, the heat was no longer oppressive. Their progress, in consequence, was proportionate, and long before the twilight gathered about them, they had made good many toilsome miles on their return. The hunter, like the savage whose place he filled, seemed to select among the blind signs of their wild route with a species of instinct, seldom abating his speed, and never pausing to deliberate. A rapid and oblique glance at the moss on the trees, with an occasional upward gaze towards the setting sun, or a steady but passing look at the direction of the numerous watercourses through which he waded, were sufficient to determine his path and remove his greatest difficulties. In the meantime, the forest began to change its hues, losing that lively green which had embellished its arches in the graver light which is the usual precursor of the close of day. While the eyes of the sisters were endeavoring to catch glimpses through the trees of the flood of golden glory which formed a glittering halo around the sun, tinging here and there with ruby streaks, or bordering with narrow edgings of shining yellow a mass of clouds that lay piled at no great distance above the western hills, Hawkeye turned suddenly and, pointing upwards towards the gorgeous heavens, he spoke, "Yonder is the signal given to a man to seek his food and natural rest," he said. "Better and wiser would it be if he could understand the signs of nature, and take a lesson from the fowls of the air and the beasts of the fields. Our night, however, will soon be over, for with the moon we must be up and moving again. I remember to have fought the Maquas hereaways in the first war in which I ever drew blood from man, and we threw up a work of blocks to keep the ravenous varmints from handling our scalps. If my marks do not fail me, we shall find the place a few rods farther to our left." Without waiting for an assent, or indeed for any reply, the sturdy hunter moved boldly into a dense thicket of young chestnuts, shoving aside the branches of the exuberant shoots which nearly covered the ground, like a man who expected at each step to discover some object he had formerly known. The recollection of the scout did not deceive him. After penetrating through the brush, matted as it was with briars, for a few hundred feet, he entered an open space that surrounded a low green hillock, which was crowned by the decayed blockhouse in question. This rude and neglected building was one of those deserted works which, having been thrown up on an emergency, had been abandoned with the disappearance of danger, and was now quietly crumbling in the solitude of the forest, neglected and nearly forgotten, like the circumstances which had caused it to be reared. Such memorials of the passage and struggles of man are yet frequent throughout the broad barrier of wilderness which once separated the hostile provinces, and form a species of ruins that are intimately associated with the recollections of colonial history, and which are in appropriate keeping with the gloomy character of the surrounding scenery. The roof of bark had long since fallen and mingled with the soil, but the huge logs of pine, which had been hastily thrown together, still preserved their relative positions, though one angle of the work had given way under the pressure, and threatened a speedy downfall to the remainder of the rustic edifice. While Hayward and his companions hesitated to approach a building so decayed, Hawkeye and the Indians entered within the low walls, not only without fear, but with obvious interest. While the former surveyed the ruins, both internally and externally, with the curiosity of one whose recollections were reviving at each moment, Chingachgook related to his son in the language of the Delawares, and with the pride of a conqueror, the brief history of the skirmish which had been fought in his youth in that secluded spot. A strain of melancholy, however, blended with his triumph, rendering his voice, as usual, soft and musical. In the meantime, the sisters gladly dismounted and prepared to enjoy their halt in the coolness of the evening, and in a security which they believed nothing but the beasts of the field could invade. "Would not our resting place have been more retired, my worthy friend?" demanded the more vigilant Duncan, perceiving that the scout had already finished his short survey. "Had we chosen a spot less known and one more rarely visited than this?" "Few live who know the blockhouse was ever raised," was the slow and musing answer. "'Tis not often that books are made and narratives written of such a scrimmage as was here fought between the Mohicans and the Mohawks in a war of their own waging. I was then a younker, and went out with the Delawares because I knowed they were a scandalized and wronged race. 40 days and 40 nights did the imps crave our blood around this pile of logs, which I designed and partly reared, being, as you'll remember, no Indian myself, but a man without a cross. The Delawares lent themselves to the work, and we made it good, 10 to 20, until our numbers were nearly equal. And then we sallied out upon the hounds, and not a man of them ever got back to tell the fate of his party. Yes, yes, I was then young, and new to the sight of blood, and not relishing the thought that creatures who had spirits like myself should lay on the naked ground to be torn asunder by beasts or to bleach in the rains, I buried the dead with my own hands under that very little hillock where you have placed yourselves, and no bad seat does it make neither, though it be raised by the bones of mortal men. Hayward and the sisters arose on the instant from the grassy sepulchre, nor could the two latter, notwithstanding the terrific scenes they had so recently passed through, entirely suppress an emotion of natural horror when they found themselves in such familiar contact with the grave of the dead Mohawks. The gray light, the gloomy little area of dark grass surrounded by its border of brush, beyond which the pines rose in breathing silence apparently into the very clouds, and the death-like stillness of the vast forest, were all in unison to deepen such a sensation. "They are gone, and they are harmless," continued Hawkeye, waving his hand with a melancholy smile at their manifest alarm. "They'll never shout the war whoop nor strike a blow with the tomahawk again. And of all those who aided in placing them where they lie, Chingachgook and I only are living. The brothers and family of the Mohican formed our war party, and you see before you all that are now left of his race." The eyes of the listeners involuntarily sought the forms of the Indians, with a compassionate interest in their desolate fortune. The dark persons were still to be seen within the shadows of the blockhouse, the son listening to the relation of his father with that sort of intenseness which would be created by a narrative that redounded so much to the honor of those whose names he had long revered for their courage and savage virtues.
"I had thought the Delawares a pacific people," said Duncan, "and that they never waged war in person, trusting the defense of their lands to those very Mohawks that you slew." "'Tis true in part," returned the scout, "and yet, at the bottom, 'tis a wicked lie. Such a treaty was made in ages gone by through the deviltries of the Dutchers, who wished to disarm the natives that had the best right to the country where they had settled themselves. The Mohicans, though a part of the same nation, having to deal with the English, never entered into that silly bargain, but kept to their manhood, as in truth did the Delawares when their eyes were opened to their folly. You see before you a chief of the great Mohican Sagamores. Once his family could chase their deer over tracts of country wider than that which belongs to the Albany Patteroon without crossing a brook or hill that was not their own. But what is left to their descendant? He may find his 6 feet of earth when God chooses, and keep it in peace, perhaps, if he has a friend who will take the pains to sink his head so low that the plowshares cannot reach it."
"Enough," said Hayward, apprehensive that the subject might lead to a discussion that would interrupt the harmony so necessary to the preservation of his fair companions.
"We have journeyed far, and few among us are blessed with forms like that of yours, which seem to know neither fatigue nor weakness." "The sinews and bones of a man carry me through it all," said the hunter, surveying his muscular limbs with a simplicity that betrayed the honest pleasure the compliment afforded him. "There are larger and heavier men to be found in the settlements, but you might travel many days in a city before you could meet one able to walk 50 miles without stopping to take breath, or who has kept the hounds within hearing during a chase of hours. However, as flesh and blood are not always the same, it is quite reasonable to suppose that the gentle ones are willing to rest, after all they have seen and done this day. Uncas, clear out the spring while your father and I make a cover for their tender heads of these chestnut shoots, and a bed of grass and leaves."
The dialogue ceased while the hunter and his companions busied themselves in preparations for the comfort and protection of those they guided. A spring, which many long years before had induced the natives to select the place for their temporary fortification, was soon cleared of leaves, and a fountain of crystal gushed from the bed, diffusing its waters over the verdant hillock. A corner of the building was then roofed in such a manner as to exclude the heavy dew of the climate, and piles of sweet shrubs and dried leaves were laid beneath it for the sisters to repose on. While the diligent woodsmen were employed in this manner, Cora and Alice partook of that refreshment which duty required, much more than inclination prompted them to accept. They then retired within the walls, and first offering up their thanksgivings for past mercies, and petitioning for a continuance of the divine favor throughout the coming night, they laid their tender forms on the fragrant couch, and in spite of recollections and forebodings, soon sank into those slumbers which nature so imperiously demanded, and which were sweetened by hopes for the morrow. Duncan had prepared himself to pass the night in watchfulness near them, just without the ruin, but the scout, perceiving his intention, pointed towards Chingachgook, as he coolly disposed his own person on the grass, and said, "The eyes of a white man are too heavy and too blind for such a watch as this. The Mohican will be our sentinel, therefore let us sleep."
"I proved myself a sluggard on my post during the past night," said Hayward, "and have less need of repose than you, who did more credit to the character of a soldier. Let all the party seek their rest, then, while I hold guard. If we lay among the white tents of the 60th, and in front of an enemy like the French, I could not ask for a better watchman," returned the scout. "But in the darkness, and among the signs of the wilderness, your judgment would be like the folly of a child, and your vigilance thrown away. Do then, like Uncas and myself, sleep, and sleep in safety."
Hayward perceived in truth that the younger Indian had thrown his form on the side of the hillock while they were talking, like one who sought to make the most of the time allotted to rest, and that his example had been followed by David, whose voice literally clove to his jaws with the fever of his wound, heightened as it was by their toilsome march. Unwilling to prolong a useless discussion, the young man affected to comply by posting his back against the logs of the blockhouse in a half-recumbent posture, though resolutely determined in his own mind not to close an eye until he had delivered his precious charge into the arms of Monroe himself. Hawkeye, believing he had prevailed, soon fell asleep, and a silence as deep as the solitude in which they had found it pervaded the retired spot. For many minutes, Duncan succeeded in keeping his senses on the alert and alive to every moaning sound that arose from the forest. His vision became more acute as the shades of evening settled on the place, and even after the stars were glimmering above his head, he was able to distinguish the recumbent forms of his companions as they lay stretched on the grass, and to note the person of Chingachgook, who sat upright and motionless as one of the trees which formed the dark barrier on every side. He still heard the gentle breathings of the sisters, who lay within a few feet of him, and not a leaf was ruffled by the passing air, of which his ear did not detect the whispering sound. At length, however, the mournful notes of a whippoorwill became blended with the moanings of an owl. His heavy eyes occasionally sought the bright rays of the stars, and then he fancied he saw them through the fallen lids. At instants of momentary wakefulness he mistook a bush for his associate sentinel. His head next sank upon his shoulder, which in its turn sought the support of the ground, and finally his whole person became relaxed and pliant, and the young man sank into a deep sleep, dreaming that he was a knight of ancient chivalry, holding his midnight vigils before the tent of a recaptured princess, whose favor he did not despair of gaining by such a proof of devotion and watchfulness. How long the tired Duncan lay in this insensible state he never knew himself, but his slumbering visions had been long lost in total forgetfulness when he was awakened by a light tap on the shoulder. Aroused by this signal, slight as it was, he sprang upon his feet with a confused recollection of the self-imposed duty he had assumed with the commencement of the night. "Who comes?" he demanded, feeling for his sword at the place where it was usually suspended. "Speak, friend or enemy?" "Friend," replied the low voice of Chingachgook, who, pointing upwards at the luminary which was shedding its mild light through the opening in the trees directly in their bivouac, immediately added in his rude English, "Moon comes, and white man's fort far, far off. Time to move, when sleep shuts both eyes of the Frenchman."
"You say true. Call up your friends and bridle the horses while I prepare my own companions for the march."
"We are awake, Duncan," said the soft, silvery tones of Alice within the building, "and ready to travel very fast after so refreshing a sleep. But you have watched through the tedious night in our behalf, after having endured so much fatigue the livelong day."
"Say rather, I would have watched, but my treacherous eyes betrayed me. Twice have I proved myself unfit for the trust I bear."
"Nay, Duncan, deny it not,"
interrupted the smiling Alice, issuing from the shadows of the building into the light of the moon in all the loveliness of her freshened beauty.
"I know you to be a heedless one when self is the object of your care, and but too vigilant in favor of others. Can we not tarry here a little longer while you find the rest you need? Cheerfully, most cheerfully, will Cora and I keep the vigils, while you and all these brave men endeavor to snatch a little sleep."
"If shame could cure me of my drowsiness, I should never close an eye again," said the uneasy youth, gazing at the ingenuous countenance of Alice, where, however, in its sweet solicitude, he read nothing to confirm his half-awakened suspicion. "It is but too true that after leading you into danger by my heedlessness, I have not even the merit of guarding your pillows as should become a soldier."
"No one but Duncan himself should accuse Duncan of such a weakness. Go, then, and sleep. Believe me, neither of us, weak girls as we are, will betray our watch."
The young man was relieved from the awkwardness of making any further protestations of his own demerits by an exclamation from Chingachgook and the attitude of riveted attention assumed by his son.
"The Mohicans hear an enemy," whispered Hawkeye, who by this time, in common with the whole party, was awake and stirring. "They scent danger in the wind."
"God forbid," exclaimed Hayward. "Surely we have had enough of bloodshed."
While he spoke, however, the young soldier seized his rifle, and advancing towards the front, prepared to atone for his venial remissness by freely exposing his life in defense of those he attended.
"'Tis some creature of the forest prowling around us in quest of food," he said in a whisper,
as soon as the low and apparently distant sounds which had startled the Mohicans reached his own ears.
"'Hist!'
returned the attentive scout. "'Tis man. Even I can now tell his tread, poor as my senses are when compared to an Indian's. That scampering Huron has fallen in with one of Montcalm's outlying parties, and they have struck upon our trail. I shouldn't like myself to spill more human blood in this spot," he added, looking around with anxiety in his features at the dim objects by which he was surrounded. "But what must be, must. Lead the horses into the blockhouse, Uncas. And friends, do you follow to the same shelter. Poor and old as it is, it offers a cover, and has rung with the crack of a rifle afore tonight." He was instantly obeyed, the Mohicans leading the Narragansetts within the ruin, whither the whole party repaired with the most guarded silence. The sounds of approaching footsteps were now too distinctly audible to leave any doubts as to the nature of the interruption. They were soon mingled with voices calling to each other in an Indian dialect, which the hunter, in a whisper, affirmed to Hayward was the language of the Hurons. When the party reached the point where the horses had entered the thicket which surrounded the blockhouse, they were evidently at fault, having lost those marks which until that moment had directed their pursuit. It would seem by the voices that 20 men were soon collected at that one spot, mingling their different opinions and advice in noisy clamor. "The knaves know our weakness," whispered Hawkeye, who stood by the side of Hayward in deep shade, looking through an opening in the logs. "Oh, they wouldn't indulge their idleness in such a squaw's march. Listen to the reptiles. Each man among them seems to have two tongues and but a single leg." Duncan, brave as he was in the combat, could not, in such a moment of painful suspense, make any reply to the cool and characteristic remark of the scout. He only grasped his rifle more firmly and fastened his eyes upon the narrow opening, through which he gazed upon the moonlight view with increasing anxiety. The deeper tones of one who spoke as having authority were next heard, amid a silence that denoted the respect with which his orders, or rather advice, was received. After which, by the rustling of leaves and cracking of dried twigs, it was apparent the savages were separating in pursuit of the lost trail. Fortunately for the pursued, the light of the moon, while it shed a flood of mild luster upon the little area around the ruin, was not sufficiently strong to penetrate the deep arches of the forest, where the objects still lay in deceptive shadow. The search proved fruitless, for so short and sudden had been the passage from the faint path the travelers had journeyed into the thicket that every trace of their footsteps was lost in the obscurity of the woods. It was not long, however, before the restless savages were heard beating the brush, and gradually approaching the inner edge of that dense border of young chestnuts which encircled the little area. "They are coming," muttered Hayward, endeavoring to thrust his rifle through the chink in the logs. "Let us fire on their approach." "Keep everything in the shade," returned the scout. "The snapping of a flint, or even the smell of a single kernel of the brimstone, would bring the hungry varlets upon us in a body. Should it please God that we must give battle for the scalps, trust to the experience of men who know the ways of the savages and who are not often backward when the war whoop is howled." Duncan cast his eyes behind him, and saw that the trembling sisters were cowering in the far corner of the building, while the Mohicans stood in the shadow like two upright posts, ready and apparently willing to strike when the blow should be needed. Curbing his impatience, he again looked out upon the area and awaited the result in silence. At that instant, the thicket opened, and a tall and armed Huron advanced a few paces into the open space. As he gazed upon the silent blockhouse, the moon fell upon his swarthy countenance and betrayed its surprise and curiosity. He made the exclamation which usually accompanies the former emotion in an Indian, and calling in a low voice, soon drew a companion to his side. These children of the woods stood together for several moments, pointing at the crumbling edifice and conversing in the unintelligible language of their tribe. They then approached, though with slow and cautious steps, pausing every instant to look at the building, like startled deer, whose curiosity struggled powerfully with their awakened apprehensions for the mastery. The foot of one of them suddenly rested on the mound, and he stooped to examine its nature. At this moment, Hayward observed that the scout loosened his knife in his sheath and lowered the muzzle of his rifle, Imitating these movements, the young man prepared himself for the struggle which now seemed inevitable. The savages were so near that the least motion in one of the horses, or even a breath louder than common, would have betrayed the fugitives. But in discovering the character of the mound, the attention of the Hurons appeared directed to a different object. They spoke together, and the sounds of their voices were low and solemn, as if influenced by a reverence that was deeply blended with awe. Then they drew warily back, keeping their eyes riveted on the ruin, as if they expected to see the apparitions of the dead issue from its silent walls, until, having reached the boundary of the area, they moved slowly into the thicket and disappeared. Hawkeye dropped the breech of his rifle to the earth, and drawing a long, free breath, exclaimed in an audible whisper, "Aye, they respect the dead, and it has this time saved their own lives, and it may be the lives of better men, too." Hayward lent his attention for a single moment to his companion, but without replying, he again turned towards those who just then interested him more. He heard the two Hurons leave the bushes, and it was soon plain that all the pursuers were gathered about them, in deep attention to their report. After a few minutes of earnest and solemn dialogue, altogether different from the noisy clamor with which they had first collected about the spot, the sounds grew fainter and more distant, and finally were lost in the depths of the forest. Hawkeye waited until a signal from the listening Chingachgook assured him that every sound from the retiring party was completely swallowed by the distance, when he motioned to Hayward to lead forth the horses and to assist the sisters into their saddles. The instant this was done, they issued through the broken gateway, and stealing out by a direction opposite to the one by which they had entered, they quitted the spot, the sisters casting furtive glances at the silent grave and crumbling ruin as they left the soft light of the moon to bury themselves in the gloom of the woods.